that DISH and RWA worked together closely in raising concerns about the T-Mobile-Sprint merger, and it was really about the impact of going from 4 to 3. And, you know, that advocacy, I think, resulted in the Department of Justice recognizing that 4 to 3 was problematic and worked to impose a set of very strong conditions and remedies that DISH believes facilitate and expedite our entry into the wireless business. And as you know, I'm sure some of you have read, DISH has invested over $20 billion of spectrum. I'll describe those spectrum assets in a few minutes. And our goal is to offer the first standalone 5G network in the United States, not just 5GE, but full 5G compliance specifications with 3GPP release 15 and release 16 when it's completed next year, to offer an architect a service with full 5G functionality from eMBB, from massive connectivity, and ultra low latency. And towards that end, as part of the DOJ remedy, DISH has made a very substantial commitment to the FCC to build out this network. And our spectrum holdings are the following. We have 40 megahertz of nationwide AWS-4, which is all downlink. We have a 5x5 nationwide H block, which is adjacent to our AWS-4 holdings. We have nationwide 600 megahertz, at least 5x5 in every PEA, but we have nationwide. And then we have about 6 megahertz of 700 megahertz spectrum. So substantial low and mid-band spectrum that we are going to deploy as part of our build-out. And what we committed to the FCC was the following. By June of 2022, we'll have a core network deployed and offering 5G broadband service to 20% of the U.S. population. And then by June 14th of 2023, we're going to be offering nationwide 5G service to at least 70% of the U.S. population. And then by June of 2025, we'll be offering service on our 600 megahertz spectrum of at least 75% pop coverage in each PEA. So that is more of a rural deployment, but it is not everywhere. And that's where RWA members potentially come in as we are meeting these commitments. If we don't meet these commitments, we could have to pay up to $2.2 billion, be held in contempt, and lose our licenses. So we are very incentivized to satisfy those commitments from a regulatory perspective, but also a business perspective. And the remedy that DOJ was able to obtain from T-Mobile really gives us the ability to jumpstart our wireless entry. We're going to be acquiring about 9 million prepaid subs from Sprint under the Boost brand. We're getting access to a minimum of 20,000 towers as we build out our network, acquiring Sprint's 800 megahertz spectrum, which is about 13.5 megahertz nationwide low band of band 26, within 3 years of closing. And most importantly, from our perspective, is a 7-year wholesale agreement where from day one we could offer nationwide wireless services, even if we haven't built out yet. And as we build out, our networks will be connected and linked to T-Mobile's network. So if we build out Denver, for example, and a DISH wireless customer is leaving our footprint, they'll automatically be handed off to T-Mobile's network. And these set of agreements, we believe, give us a lot of flexibility to compete with T-Mobile and AT&T and Verizon. But our DNA is rural America. We've been in the satellite business 39 years, offering nationwide satellite service, both video and satellite broadband. We have thousands of small businesses selling DISH products and services. We've had relationships with them for, 30 plus years. And so as we enter the wireless market, we see opportunities in rural America, but it doesn't always make sense to build out where there are existing carriers like yourselves. And the purpose of today is really to talk about those opportunities. And one of the things that we did 2 days after we announced the DOJ remedy, we issued a 900 plus page RFP about our 5G network. I'm going to turn it over to Tom now to talk about the RFP and potential opportunities for partnerships with RWA members. Thanks, Tom.
Yeah. So as Jeff said, we're preparing for 5G deployment regardless of what happened with the transaction. So we had our engineering team working, first in discussions with vendors around the country and the globe. And then we've spent time, over in India with Jio and in Japan with Rakuten to kind of understand what's possible with a clean sheet of paper, greenfield deployment. And are pursuing an architecture that's very cloud-centric with, virtualization, network slicing, all that kind of new technology, because what we really want to do is create a wholesale network where we will sell capacity in a raw form, similar to how Amazon Web Services sells processing and storage and compute power. And so the RFP contemplates kind of a different architecture than what has been historically a proprietary end-to-end system in radio access networks. And so we've engaged a wide set of vendors in that discussion, and the responses to the RFI are due in a couple weeks. And then we'll spend a month or so evaluating and digesting that, and then try and lock in on the architecture, probably around December 1st. So, but as Jeff described, we're going to be motivated to meet the FCC deadlines. Oh, well, I should say, we think it's a real advantage to be able to go to the market with a clean sheet of paper and not have to worry about 3G and 4G legacy support, which opens the door to more innovative technology partnerships than may have been allowed in the past. But as Jeff said, the FCC requirements on us will motivate us to build in urban areas more quickly than rural. And we are open to models that would be cooperative, where we could bring 5G to or 5G capacity in the form of wholesale, as one model, to more rural areas, while utilizing the assets in cooperation with a rural provider that owns towers or fiber or different assets. RWA, I'm also on the board of the CCA, which I'm sure there's some overlap in the membership. And, I know over the years there have been many models like that where there were national carriers partnering with rural asset owners. And candidly, I'm just learning some of the, benefits and pitfalls to some of those previous relationships. But I think broadly, there's some creative structures that could be put in place that would facilitate something that says, I don't want to spend money in areas where there's already assets, and maybe some of those asset owners would like to have access to 5G technology. So it seems to me like there's probably several possible business models where there is room for cooperation. But I want to calibrate your expectations in that, we're going to see what the vendor responses are, then we'll have to understand, we'll immediately go into RF planning and start planning our deployment in the major markets. But I don't know what interval the vendors will be able to deliver radios and actual construction will start. And so our near-term priority is going to be get the architecture right and get deployment started, and then we'll be engaging more in broader business discussions on how to continuously expand the footprint. And I guess I don't know, Jeff, if there's anything more you want to say, I think it'd probably be more productive to just throw it open to Q&A.
And I agree, Tom. I just want to add one other thing, and I mentioned this to Carrie and Daryl. We also have a program where small companies, carriers, can partner with Dish on our video product. So we have our satellite service, and we also have a nationwide over-the-top service called Sling, live linear service for $25 a month. And we have recently started a program that if a carrier wants to be able to bundle with their wireless service a video product, including an over-the-top product like Sling, we have the mechanisms and the infrastructure set up to make that easy, where a carrier would get a cut of each sale, but it allows people who don't have any video product to offer it as part of their wireless services. So it's something that the Dish team is going to reach out specifically to Carrie and.
So Daryl, did you hear when I was talking?
No, for the last 2 minutes, when Jeff was speaking, it went dead for a little bit. So I apologize, folks. It just stopped recording, and then we're restarting it right now. So you may want to go back 2 minutes. Thank you.
Okay. So this is Jeff again. In addition to the potential wireless opportunities, we have a program in place today that allows wireless carriers, if they want, to bundle our video product and essentially share and some of the revenue associated with that. And we have our satellite product, but we also have a nationwide over-the-top product called Sling, the number one over-the-top product, live linear, for $25 a month. And we have a program that we're going to be talking to Carrie and Daryl about that could potentially give RWA members the opportunity, if they want, to bundle their wireless services with a Dish video product and be compensated, and we have the infrastructure in place to do that. So that's something that is immediately available if there's interest from RWA and its members. But with that, Daryl, let's open it up to questions.
Sounds good. Okay, thank you very much for that. If you have a question, to unmute your line, just press *2. And as a courtesy for those that will not be asking questions, just remain on mute. Don't unmute your phones on your end either. This way we'll have a minimum amount of background noise. So if you have any questions for our guest lecturers here, why don't you just unmute your phone, *2, and go ahead.
Oh, this is John Nettles with Pine Belt Wireless in Alabama. Appreciate y'all sharing this information with us. It does sound like it could be some interesting opportunities. You made mention to the 7-year nationwide wholesale deal, I guess maybe right out of the gate. Is that, am I understanding that's part of the information or the arrangements coming out of the Sprint T-Mobile? And if so, if we were to partner with you in one level or the other, would we perhaps be able to take advantage of that insofar as our current retail operations are concerned?
So this is Jeff. The answer is the wholesale agreement permits Dish to use T-Mobile's network to offer wireless services. So we can't take that wholesale agreement and assign it to an RWA member. However, under that wholesale agreement, we have the ability to partner with any wireless carrier to sell wireless services under a Dish brand and get the advantage of T-Mobile's nationwide network. But it has to be a Dish owned brand. But as long as it is, we then have the ability to partner with small, big, medium-sized carriers for wireless services that to ride on T-Mobile's network, which they've also made substantial FCC commitments to provide 5G broadband, and it's going to be, we think, with Sprint's 2.5 spectrum, a much better network. And so the partners that are selling Dish wireless services would be able to take advantage of that.
But to be clear, the access to the MVNO agreement is not available under your brand.
Okay. Under the scenario where it would be available, I guess, under a Dish-owned brand, if I understood you correctly.
Correct.
Does that include access to the customer premise equipment, the handsets, the home gateways, and that sort of stuff? Or would, if we were part and parcel of that, would we kind of be on our own terms of sourcing that equipment?
I think the sourcing would be, with Dish, but then the partnership is more of a like marketing opportunity where, a carrier, if they wanted to, be selling, and I'm just using, it probably won't be under the Dish name, but whatever name we're selling the services on, and we could come up with different brands, we would be able to enter into a partnership with an RWA member where they're getting access to all the benefits of the wholesale agreement, and then there would have to be a commercial relationship between Dish and whoever that carrier is. So there's opportunities under the MVNO part of the deal, as long as it's Dish branded. And then as we build out our network, where it's our spectrum, we have full flexibility to enter into any type of commercial arrangement. And that's really what we were talking about in the beginning of the call. But there's sort of nearer term MVNO opportunities, marketing / partnerships under some Dish Wireless brand. And then when it's our network, then there's no limitations at all.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, John.
Hey,
is there anyone else out there with a question?
Yeah, this is Carrie Bennett. Jeff, could you explain what you all intend to do with the, I guess what I would call the former, it would be the Nextel spectrum. There's some spectrum that's being divested, but it's kind of fuzzy to me about how that's supposed to work. It's like it's being divested unless you don't want it, and then if you do this, then you don't have to. It's confusing, and
sure.
Trying to explain that to our members. They were wondering if there's any opportunity for them to get access to that low band spectrum.
So under the agreement, we plan to purchase it, 3 years from closing, all of their 800 megahertz spectrum. There are certain penalties associated with us not doing that. Like if we haven't built out the 20% of the U.S. population within 3 years of closing, there's hundreds of millions of dollars of penalties if we don't purchase it. But it is being cleared and being used by Sprint right now for their CDMA network. And so as they get off CDMA, we want to be able to acquire when it's essentially free and clear. It's a global band 26. And our plan is to incorporate it into our 5G network. And so I understand that RWA members are using some of it. Or adjacent spectrum, Carrie, is that accurate? That is there, or you're selling devices that, I think most devices have band 26. So there's, if we own that spectrum, just like our other spectrum, we'll have flexibility to wholesale it as part of our 5G network or enter into other types of commercial arrangements. There's no real, limitations on our ability to use it and to decide the best way for us to deploy it. If that answers your question, Carrie.
Yeah, that's. I have a follow-up question. So if you meet your 20% build out in population, you don't necessarily have to acquire it. Is that how it works?
Right. It's not. Then under the agreement, there's other things. But our plan is to acquire it, but there is a situation where maybe we won't, and then T-Mo has obligations to try to then sell the 800 under the consent decree. Like they may have to conduct an auction.
You know? You're right. We're not contractually obligated, but we plan to, and the RFP contemplates 600 and 800 radios being deployed as well as our 700. And so, you know, on average, our 600 holdings are 9x9 nationwide. And as Jeff said, the 800 is 7x7. And then our 700 is 6 megahertz of downlink only. So we're going to have a pretty deep portfolio just in the low band, which propagates well, as you all know. So we think it's going to be advantageous to acquire it, and that's why we intend to do it, and we negotiated to get it.
And so, Tom, this is, I'm sorry to be hogging the questions, but as you put out your RFPs to the vendor community, are you asking them to come back with some sort of products in the 5G space that would incorporate all of that low band spectrum and assuming that you will have it? Is that part of the process? Because
yeah,
I'm just wondering, is making something that in 5G that does all of that?
No, the RFP is entirely 5G. We want to start from the ground up with 5G, not have legacy, you know, software update requirements and backwards compatibility issues. So, yeah, everything is 5G from 600 all the way up to 2 gigahertz.
And it includes all of the spectrum. It's anticipating the 800 megahertz. So we're asking for vendor solutions including 800 megahertz included.
So Tom, this is Mike Laskowski with United Wireless. Question for you, since you guys are going to be building a standalone 5G network, the phones that you guys sell for your customers, are they going to be backwards compatible with VoLTE networks or CDMA or UMTS type networks?
That's a good question, Mike. So obviously some of the customer base that we're acquiring from Sprint will, you know, are only compatible on the Sprint network. We have some customers in that base that have phones that are compatible today with the T-Mobile network and supports VoLTE. And then there's a portion of the base that can be made compatible with the T-Mobile network with a firmware upgrade from the vendors, and we're already in discussions with the vendors on that. So, but as you know, the base that we're acquiring is a prepaid base, which has relatively high churn. So we'll be managing through the churn of the devices that aren't compatible. And then going forward, of course, you know, as you've seen just in the last few months, the number of 5G devices on the market has increased significantly. And clearly within the time frame that we're deploying, if we start construction, you know, middle of next year, then going forward, essentially every device will be 5G compatible.
I guess what I'm looking for is, you know, are you going to be able to roam if we could put an agreement together with Dish? Would you guys be able to have handsets that could access our VoLTE network?
Not being an engineer, I believe the answer is yes, but
I think that's right. I mean, the devices, you know, from Apple and Samsung and Google, I think the anticipation is, you know, the 5G phones will have that capability when it's outside of our 5G footprint to roam on your VoLTE 4G network.
Right. That's what I was looking for. Thank you.
Yeah. Because I think that's what the 5G phones that are being sold today, I think that capability is already in there.
So on that note, with the prepaid customer base that you're acquiring, generally more, I would call them more low-income customers, are they going to be able to afford to change out devices and go to a 5G developed fine. I don't know if you've done any modeling around that, if you have any concerns about, I know you manage the return, but it sounds like it might be a pretty heavy subsidy there.
No, it's another good question. I should have been more clear. We have the ability to stay on the Sprint network to support the existing base. So that's not an issue, and it's going to take T-Mobile several years to make that transition. We also will be provisioning new customers on the new T-Mobile network. So the T-Mobile network, of course, being more pervasive than the current Sprint network, which is generally more dense urban, and therefore that is your characterization of the customer base is accurate. It is typically low income and much more urban, but by day one we'll be able to provision on the T-Mobile network, which will also allow us to geographically and demographically expand the reach of the customer base that we're able to acquire going forward. And then the last point I'd make is, as part of the agreement, we committed to the Department of Justice that we would also launch postpaid within a year of closing. And again, as Jeff said, the brand for that is TBD, but we intend to grow the retail base in the urban, suburban markets through both prepaid and postpaid.
Got it. So can I ask you something about your current spectrum holdings? Are there any opportunities there for RWA members to lease any of your current spectrum holdings in rural areas and do some build out now while you're waiting for this all to come to pass?
I'd say, to be candid, I wouldn't want to do that right now until we understand the architecture that we plan to deploy, so we don't foreclose that opportunity going forward. But in general, we don't anticipate having enough of our own customer traffic to fully utilize the spectrum in most rural areas. And so I think the opportunity for that type of business discussion is ripe, but it's not timely.
This is John Nettles again. Can we go back to the Boost customers that you'll be getting, or you would get? Would y'all ever be open to the idea of allowing them to use our existing networks to run? In other words, we allow them to roam on us at a fair rate?
Yes, I mean, we have the flexibility to do that. We're not locked in. If we enter into a good commercial arrangement that could afford better economics, we have the ability to do that. As long as it's compatible with your network, those Boost customers. Besides Sprint, are any RWA members, Carrie, that you're aware of doing CDMA today?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Quite a few.
So yeah, so that is an issue because when the deal closed, as Tom explained, we're going to be on T-Mo's, all new customers will be on T-Mo's network, and then the existing customers will obviously be on Sprint's network, but T-Mobile plans to phase out CDMA and everything will be transferred to the new T-Mobile network, market by market, that we would then support the Boost customers. So for the legacy CDMA, that is more difficult because there'll be some Boost customers that have CDMA-compatible devices, but all the new folks, and we intend to aggressively compete and acquire subscribers, and we believe we have the economics under the deal to do that, they will not be CDMA devices. But if they're non-CDMA devices and it's compatible, if we're able to enter into, a great, roaming agreement with a smaller carrier that provides better economics, we have the flexibility to do that. We're not locked in with T-Mobile.
But so are you saying, I've got a CDMA network, this is John Nettles again. So the Boost customers that are carrying a CDMA handset today and, might still be 2-3 years from now, you're not anticipating, allowing them to hit my network?
Well, what would happen is as Sprint transfers market by market and shuts down CDMA, we would be transferring those Boost customers in that market to T-Mobile's network. So I can't, I don't know where you're serving today. So there, the timing of it may be an issue.
Good.
Because if they're getting rid of CDMA in your market, in your service area, then we would have to transfer those Boost customers over to non-CDMA. It wouldn't be compatible any longer.
The majority of the carriers on here that have CDMA aren't overlaid with Sprint. They don't overlap.
Okay, that's good to know.
They're outside of their footprint, but some of T-Mobile does overlap some of our networks.
Got it. And generally, I mentioned this to Carrie, you know, for 5G, you know, what is sort of the plan for, if any, member on the line wants to talk about that, how do you guys get, 5G? Is it a spectrum issue? Is it a cost issue, infrastructure issue, or all of the above? So we could understand a little bit about the challenges that RWA members have as 5G is coming, be able to offer 5G to folks.
I will just step in and say it's probably all of the above, depending on your situation. So I think most of our members, and please speak up if you feel differently, are still building out their LTE networks and trying to implement VoLTE. So they haven't gotten to 5G yet. And, they're still, when you're still struggling trying to get decent roaming agreements with the large carriers, including, T-Mobile, and you can't implement VoLTE, that's a problem. So we really want to see DISH be the fourth network that can work with these guys, but it's not going to help them in the next, 4 or 5 years. Because they're all coming from analog to 2G to 3G to, LTE, and 5G is right on the horizon.
Right. No, that's helpful, Terry, to understand that. Go ahead, Carrie.
Now, I was going to ask one other question, and that is, I don't mean for you to get into the whole, merger discussion or anything like that, but one of the things that you all is you have a tolling arrangement with the FCC on the build out of your other
right
licenses. And
right,
when does that start? I've heard different things about when that started tolling. I don't know if it's already started tolling or if it's not tolling until the order comes out, or what's the deal on that?
Our understanding is the tolling would start when the order comes out, and then there's going to be a 30-day public notice period on whether the extensions and 5G build-out commitments should be granted or not. So I think the tolling of our March 2020 deadlines will be, next few weeks or whenever the five commissioners vote it, and then folks will have the opportunity to comment on our extension requests and our 5G build-out commitments, which we believe are in the public interest, and not many companies would risk millions of dollars of penalties and losing their licenses and being held in contempt. And we're doing it because it aligns with what we want to do as a business, and we see real opportunity to do that. Some of you probably know, we were building out a narrowband IoT network. We had flexible use licenses, but it was not a 5G network because we're sort of waiting for the final specifications to be done. So the timing of it, we're going to have to build out a 4G NB-IoT network by March 2020, which we were well on our way to do. But now with the merger remedy, we could, if the merger goes through and the extension requests and commitments are granted, we can focus on deploying 5G more quickly than we would have been in a non-merger scenario. And we're giving up legal rights like flexible use, and we're committing to do 5G broadband, and we have to do it under the threat of contempt as part of the consent decree. So overall, we think those commitments are in the public interest and help us align our business goals with the goal of the United States to, deploy 5G and beat, China. Are there any other questions?
I guess when I think of 5G, I think of data services. And I think that's a very different picture for rural America versus an urban area where I guess I feel like most of your build out will probably be initially. And then you made a comment that, you weren't going to have any 3G or LTE legacy support for your customers. I'm just curious of what that looks like from a public safety standpoint, 911, how does that work nationwide when those customers are roaming, outside of maybe your initial build out areas, what does that look like?
Right. And that's what I was saying, that the devices allow that roaming capability. So it's, if you have a 5G device and you're outside of, our footprint, you're still going to be able to do, 911 and all those public safety things. And I think, our regulatory requirements, and I think the other carriers who are selling 5G devices, everyone wants to be able to make sure that if they're not in the footprint, they could dial 911 and, police and fire could track them. So I don't really see that as an issue. And in terms of just the data, 5G is, as you guys know, more than just AT&T's 5GE. And for rural America, things like the massive connectivity part of 5G, where you're going to have, a million connections per square kilometer for precision agriculture, remote surgery, and ultra-low latency services that, have to be architected, the right way. They all need fiber. The opportunities to provide more than just fast cell phones. That's what true 5G could afford. And our network will be architected to offer those services. And that's where there's potential opportunities with RWA members, that if you guys have your own towers and you have fiber and need additional spectrum, those areas we may not want to build out. I mean, you've already built out your service, you're experienced in your market, but you may not have sufficient spectrum, and you may not, you're upgrading to LTE and not have the latest and greatest 5G. And that's where there's potential opportunities where if we could enter into, a business arrangement that makes sense for both of us, where you guys could take advantage of what we're providing, and we could offer dish wireless services in, your area as part of a partnership, and then you guys get access to our nationwide 5G network. Those are the types of things that we are open to, because we are in rural America today with satellite. That is what we've been doing for 39 years, and we have that base, and we have customers there already. So we have customers in your communities receiving satellite today, and we want to be able to give them great wireless services. And it may be better for us, more profitable for us, to do that through partnership rather than just overbuilding in your communities. That's how we may be different than some of the other carriers that you guys have tried to deal with in the past.
In that scenario where you might be partnered with a rural carrier, and so with using their facilities that they either already have or will build out, do you contemplate, branding is important. Y'all certainly get that. I'm not telling y'all anything. It's important to us as well. Would we be able to maintain our identity as, local cellular carrier XYZ that's been here since 1958?
Well, those are the details. Tom, go ahead. Yeah.
Well, that's the concept of a wholesale network is, it could be wholesaling to an existing carrier that needs capacity. It could be wholesaling to an enterprise. It could be wholesaling to a industry vertical that wants to serve agriculture, for instance. It could be wholesaling to a cloud service provider that wants to bundle access with mobile edge computing. So long story short, if you wanted to buy a portion of capacity on the network, then you would keep your own brand. But if we were to do something cooperatively in your area where we think it's mutually economically beneficial to work together rather than us investing new capital, then it would, you know, that one of the potential outcomes would be some of the capacity is just dedicated to you in exchange for the deployment arrangement.
I think I get that.
If there's no more questions, I just want to conclude. You guys are very lucky to have Carrie Bennett as your general counsel. I had the pleasure of working with her over the past year. She is smart, she's tenacious, and respected. So I think you're very fortunate to have her. I'm sure you know this already, but I just wanted to make that clear.
I did not pay justice, by the way.
That was
you did not.
And also, I will just add, a lot of our members are rural telephone companies as well as being rural wireless providers. And we will be meeting. We have our annual RWA has its annual meeting in Denver on September 24th. And I know that Jill Canfield and Mike Romano from NTCA have reached out to Jeff, and I believe DISH is also going to do a presentation during their industry committee meeting in Denver on Monday. I think at 3:00 or 3:30.
Yeah, Tom
like
Cullen will be there. I think it is at 3:30.
So if you're going to be in Denver, that's another opportunity to talk to Tom and see him. You know, field some more questions, I guess. On the technical side.
We haven't met Carrie, but I'm happy to meet with you at that time as well.
Okay, sounds good. All right. Thank you so much, Daryl. I'll turn it back over to you to conclude.
All right, thanks. So unless there's any further questions, I'd like to thank the DISH representatives for joining us for this very timely topic, and of course, RWA's members for dialing into yet another Education Committee session. So please enjoy the last few days of summer that we have before us and a safe and relaxing Labor Day holiday weekend. This concludes the call. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Bye.